If you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, you've probably got a million questions running through your head and you just don't know who to ask. I know how you're feeling because it happened to me. I had so many questions. How would I cope with the treatment? What happens when it's over? And how on earth do I get my life back when the world as I know it has been turned upside down? If any of this rings true, then you've come to the right place. This is So Now I've Got Breast Cancer, the podcast for anyone who's just been diagnosed. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan, the breast surgeon with breast cancer, and I found out the hard way just how little I knew when I suddenly found myself in the chemo chair. It's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. There's a lot of bad information out there, and I want to guide you down the right path. So if you've got a question, this show will answer it for you. Welcome to the first episode, and it's lovely to have you here. Now, I've spent the last 8 years answering your breast cancer questions to help fill the gaps that your medical team just don't have the time to explain. And I've written books and filmed videos, but it's now time to help you in another way with my new podcast. Now, some of you might have been listening to me for a while when it was called Don't Ignore the Elephant. And there, I focused on the things that no one talks about, like sex after cancer. What happens when we die? And how do you love your body again? And you can still find those episodes here. So what's new? Why the rebrand? Look, I know breast cancer can affect every part of your life, from how to find a bra that fits to wondering whether you should be exercising, how to deal with friends who ghost you, or how to live with the fear of recurrence whilst you're dealing with the side effects of the menopause. This is now a space for you to get reliable, trustworthy information. I'm an expert in breast cancer, and even I was stunned at the amount of misinformation out there. So I'm going to be answering all your questions, helped by an amazing team of guests to set the record straight. The show notes will tell you how to get in touch, and you can even send me a voice note and I'll play it on the show. No topic is off limits, and each week I'll bring in a guest to focus on the issues that you want me to talk about. This first episode is slightly different, as I'll be answering some of your questions myself, like this one from Claire, and she asked me, what are my views on alcohol consumption being one of the causes of breast cancer and its reoccurrence? And do you still drink alcohol? Now, I've struggled with this because as a medical student and a junior doctor, I drank a lot, at least 3 nights a week for several years. Hangovers were just part of the job. And then I got breast cancer aged 40 in 2015, followed by a local recurrence in 2018, and then again in 2023. And there is a lot of evidence now to prove that alcohol does increase the risk of getting breast cancer. And the more you drink, the higher the risk. And the higher the risk of it coming back. And in the beginning, I did blame myself and wonder, is it all my fault? Have I done this to me? But the truth is, we have no way of knowing what triggers a breast cell to turn into a cancerous one. I was fit and slim and had no family history, but I had to realise it's not my fault. And there are many people who don't drink who still get breast cancer too. Do I still drink? Good question. Very rarely. Now, I might have a glass of bubbly for a special occasion or try my husband's wine, but that's because I still like the taste. But I don't have any more because the night sweats are never worth it. And the one time I have had a hangover, it took me right back to chemo again. But if you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, the guidelines say that you shouldn't have more than 5 units a week as it can increase the risk of recurrence. But if you do like a glass of wine or a gin and tonic, enjoy it and don't feel guilty about it because your quality of life is just as important as the quantity. I've had a question from Suchitra in India, and I know many of you are listening from all over the world, and she asked, what's the best food to eat after a cancer diagnosis? Now, I'm planning on doing an episode on nutrition next season, but in a nutshell, there is no magic diet or supplement that can cure you, and everything can be eaten in moderation. There is nothing you need to avoid completely. And international guidelines recommend a diet full of a rainbow of fruit and veg, sticking to non-processed foods that you cook yourself. But it's easier said than done when fresh food can be expensive to buy, and I know how draining it can be to work out what to cook every night. And I'll admit, if my husband's away, I have been known just to have a bowl of cereal for supper. Now, I try to stick with the 80-20 rule. I eat as well as I can most of the time. But if I'm tired or lazy or just really fancy something indulgent, then I don't feel guilty about eating it. After all, I've had cancer, and some days I just need the emotional crux of comfort food. And I'd love to know what your guilty pleasure is. The next question is from Sophie and Catherine, and it's one that I hear all the time. And they want to know why we're not scanned at the end of treatment, and why do we have to wait for symptoms of metastatic breast cancer to develop when it's then too late to be cured? And as I've said, I get asked this a lot, and I'll be getting an oncologist to answer these questions soon, but let me try and explain it now. We know that up to a third of breast cancers can come back as stage 4 disease despite having the latest treatment, and I know that's a really scary thing to hear. But remember this, it doesn't mean that you have a 1 in 3 chance of getting incurable cancer. Your own risk is based on lots of things like your age, how big your cancer was, what grade it was, what your receptors were, and whether your lymph nodes are involved. Your risk of a recurrence is actually highest in the first couple of years after a diagnosis. That's why we keep a close eye on you for the first 5 years, with yearly mammograms and a checkup at the end. After that, the longer you live, the less likely it is to come back. But it can still happen, even 30 years later. Now, at the moment, there isn't a blood test that can tell us if you have stage 4 disease. And although tests are being done to look at liquid biopsies that might detect breast cancer DNA in your blood, it is still in the research stage. We could give you a CT scan once a year, let's say in June. But a negative scan can mean one of two things. One, that you don't have metastatic cancer. Or two, that you do, but the spots are too small to be seen by the naked eye on the scan. And if you didn't have metastatic cells in your body at the time of the CT scan, they could develop in the next couple of months, and you might start to have symptoms before your next scan in June came around. Look, I know how hard it is, and I've worried myself sick thinking a bad headache means it's in my brain, and it's so easy to become paranoid over every ache and pain, especially when social media and the news is often full of young women dying of breast cancer, and I hate it, and I wish we had a cure for this horrific disease. This is why it's so important to know what the symptoms and signs of metastatic breast cancer are, and I know it's scary to read them, but you need to know what they are and what to do if you're worried, and I'll put all that information for you in the show notes. As you can see, I've covered a wide range of topics here, some that are hard to hear, but that's the point of this podcast. It's a safe space for you to ask me anything, knowing you'll get an answer you can trust. And if you've got a question that you'd like me to answer or you'd simply want to get in touch, you'll find all the details in the show notes. But I also wanted to talk to you today about hope, because there is hope for the future, for all of us. And I'm one example of that. Palbociclib, the drug I'm taking to stop a third recurrence, wasn't widely available in the UK until 2022, and that's 7 years after I was diagnosed. Scientists have worked out how breast cancer cells spread to the lungs of mice, and they think they can stop it happening in humans. And vaccines are being trialled to cure metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer. Hope is all around us. Now, as I've said, I'm going to be covering some challenging subjects in the weeks ahead, and I wanted to end each podcast with a moment of joy, and I couldn't think of anyone better to do it than the poet Donna Ashworth.
Don't lose hope. Put hope in a safe place. Not a super safe place, the place we cleverly stash things in, never to be seen again. Just a safe, everyday place, like beside your car keys. Put hope beside your car keys, and each time you leave the house, you'll see hope glistening there, and you won't forget to take it with you. And if you're careful with hope, you'll never lose it again. You'll never experience that numb, hapless cloud that descends upon your life with its soul-sucking, vacuous apathy. Without your car keys, you're going nowhere. It's the same with hope. Hope is the engine, the steering wheel, the power in your life. Keep it safe. Don't lose hope. Keep it with your keys. You need it more than you may know.
That was Donna Ashworth reading her poem, Don't Lose Hope. And I'm really excited to announce that Donna has agreed to be our resident podcast poet. And she's here with me now so you can meet her properly. Now, I came late to Donna's work. I only discovered her when my mum died and her book of poems Lost got me through those dark days. And I took a chance and I reached out and asked her if she would consider reading a poem to my listeners to give them a bit of joy at the end of each episode. And I'm thrilled to say she said yes. But why would you take a chance on someone like me? So Donna, I want to ask you, can you tell us a bit about yourself and why you took me up on my crazy offer?
Oh, it was a no-brainer, Liz. I mean, you are... Everything that you do is so important and so comes from such a place of knowledge and knowing and wisdom, but lived experience as well. So I see you as a true beacon of hope because you come at it from so many different angles and you provide so much for people who in that moment are desperately in need of that lighthouse. You know, let's not go and crash on the rocks, let's follow that light. So everything that you do is exactly why I do what I do when it comes to trying to find the hope and bring the hope. So it was a complete meeting of lights, I like to think.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. I'm blushing, I don't know what to say, but could you
all true
likewise, two fangirling moments here. Can you tell the listeners what got you started into writing poems?
I'm asked this a lot and I can't quite put my finger on how it started, other than that I had reached a place in my sort of early 40s where I thought there must be more than this. I'm not giving myself enough. I'm not doing that thing. You know, we all have that thing that we just do. We did in childhood, perhaps we did it into our early teens, and then life takes over and you are told that thing will not make you money, so you leave the thing and you move on and you do life. And it can be a sad old lonely road if you are not letting, you know, the things that are inside of you out and into the world. And I just reached a point and I didn't think for a minute anybody would ever want to read it or care, but I started doing it anyway. And I remember the people around me looking at me a little strangely thinking, you okay? And I'm so glad that I did it. I just started writing from the heart and sharing it quite bravely because it's a hard thing to do. I was anonymous at first. Mm-hmm. And then I found the courage. And it has spiraled and snowballed so organically and in such a lovely way that I'm just enjoying every moment and loving to continue.
How do you describe your poems?
They are very simple. They are delivering a message from me to whoever it is reading them. And they are very much about getting straight into your busy day and your busy life with a thought that you will then take away. And your personality and your energy and your thoughts will do something different with that thought than the thought that I originally gave you. So it will grow and it will morph and it will change with you and it will change with every person. And that's what I really enjoy watching, how people take that thought and make it their own and make it different.
Do you have any idea how your poems impact the people who read them?
I see it. I can see it on social media. It's great to see. One of my favourite things is watching people share and tag because there is such poetry in that act itself. The way that they tag someone and say, this made me think of you and I'm sending you love today. And, you know, that energy attachment to the words, especially when it goes viral or when it really resonates, it creates a whole world of light of its own. And I do like to follow and see how each paragraph of words, I don't think about it as being me. I think about it as being the thoughts in the passage. I do see how they can change people's thoughts for the day, which can then change absolutely everything. Ripples and ripples and ripples make waves, and waves can change coastlines given time. So I do see that side of it, and I'm again fascinated by how that light attracts more light and, you know, rains down on the world like a glitter ball, you know, of light. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
It's beautiful. And I wish I'd known about you back in 2015 when I was diagnosed.
Yeah.
What do you hope your poems will do for my listeners?
I hope they will reframe quite rightly negative thinking and, you know, the way that our brain over catastrophizes and goes immediately to the dark side and the biggest fears and the worry. Yeah. And that's all perfectly natural. But I hope that it will be that little perspective shift that says, but, you know, if you follow people and you read their stories, you will find hope in every single chapter. And it's that hope that rallies against the statistics. And it's the one they can't explain. And I think clinging on to that in these moments is really, really vital.
You're right. It's those little words that just help you get through the day, just something to keep you going.
Yeah.
So you've got a new book out called Wild Hope. Can you tell us what it's about and who it's for?
It's for everyone. And it's a little bit of a quest of mine since the pandemic. I sort of saw myself in the pandemic as a place where people could come to for hope. So since then, I have been really fascinated by what hope is and how people who are facing the worst things find it, how they harness it. Does it exist? Is it in your imagination? Mm. Can you share it? Can you learn it? So this book is a collection of poems and quotes and prose to daily for everyone, no matter what you are facing, seek that hope out. Or if you need to share it with someone in your life and you don't have the words, they're there.
I love that. You can just leaf through the book and find what you need for the day to help you keep going.
And I believe the book tells you. And I was actually had a little party at my publisher's yesterday and they handed me the book and they said, can you read one? Can you do the book magic thing where you open it on a page? and I was so on the spot, but I did it and it opened it a poem called Backbones, which is about people who are often unseen, but they're there holding everything up, which was just perfect for the moment for the entire team. So I believe the book tells you whatever you believe in, you know, it'll let you know what you need to read that day.
I love that. And on that note, it's time to leave Donna to create some book magic of her own. And I'm going to ask her to open the book and read us today's poem.
Thank you so much. I have opened it on page 125. You are nature. There is a reason why walking amongst nature is most people's best advice when depression strikes. Because walking in nature is a return to home. You are not a lover of nature or in need of some nature. You are nature. You are as much nature as the trees in your garden and the bees on your picnic. You were designed to live your days out in the wild with your fellow creatures and plants. But progress, humanity, had different plans for us all. And so we exist day to day in our homes, but never home. The quickest route back to self, to inner peace, is bare feet on grass, arms around trees, head in the clouds and heart in a forest. Put your weary body in water whenever you can. Smell every flower you see and crumble dirt between your tired of typing fingers. You are nature, so go home once in a while. It will bring you so much you didn't even know you were missing.
Thank you. That was You Are Nature from Donna Ashworth's new book, Wild Hope. And that really resonated with me. Just being outside, whether I'm walking my dog or swimming in a river, it always centers me. I can laugh or cry without being judged. And in those moments, I'm just Liz. I can leave my cancer behind. And I'd love to know if you feel the same. If you want to read more of Donna's poems or send me a question to answer on the show, you'll find all the details in the show notes. Next week, I'm going to be answering all your questions about breast health after breast cancer with the amazing GP, Dr. Philippa Kay, who you may have seen on the sofa of this morning. She's going to help us understand things like, why do you still get breast pain after breast cancer? And how on earth do you find a bra that fits?
I would like you to stand in your bra shop and do a few jumping jacks if you do jumping jacks, or run on the spot if you run. Because if they're jiggling around too much, you will notice that.
I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you then. So Now I've Got Breast Cancer is produced by Birdline Media.